Network, Catalog and Cocktails, your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data management. I'm Tim Gasper, longtime data nerd, product guy, joined by Juan Cicada. Hey, Juan.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing? It is always a pleasure to be in people's ears and they can take a break and listen and learn about the latest in data and analytics and AI. And today is a historic day because it's the first time that we have another guest who's also Juan. There we have two Juans. And actually, there's not that many Juans in data, I would think. I don't know. I haven't encountered that many. Or I think you're probably the first one. So super, super excited to have Juan Goricho, who is the data analytics executive with more than like 25 years of experience, been delivering business value through data. He's been at TD Bank, been at Visa, been at the Walt Disney Company. We're going to have a fantastic conversation. Juan, how are you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm doing great. And I'm glad I'm part of this historic milestone of being the two Juans in one podcast. Like that's unique in the podcast industry, I think. So happy to be here.
I love it. We can't get enough Juan. Like we'll try to have a Juan party and just invite all the Juans of data together.
Exactly.
Actually, just a shout out to my friend. There's another Juan in Austin, JP, Juan Pablo, who's also half Colombian, and we co-organized the Austin low-key data happy hour. So there are more Juans in data here. But all right, well, let's kick it off first. Talent Toast. What are we drinking and what are we toasting for? We're honest, no BS. We are pre-recorded early in the morning. So I don't know. No judgment, but also what are you drinking and or what's your latest favorite drink right now? Cocktail.
Cocktail. I'm a huge fan of there's this Peruvian cocktail called Chilcano.
Oh.
So if you drink Peruvian cocktails, you're used to Pisco Sour, which is the classic one, but like they say that it takes like half an hour to prepare a pisco sour and like 2 minutes to drink it, right? Well, Chilcano is just ginger ale, pisco, bitter drops, and that's it. Super easy, very refreshing. It's my go-to cocktail now. So like heavily recommended, Chilcano.
Huh. Oh, wow. That's an easy one. I love that you put bitters because the one that people typically drink in Peru and in yeah. Chile is piscola, just pisco.
Exactly.
But that's just like rum and coke, but not.
Yeah, okay. This is ginger ale, pisco, bitter, lemon. That's it.
All right, that's a good one to try. Cool, thanks for that one. How about you?
I am just drinking coffee this morning because it's still early, and I woke up a little later than usual, so this is still my first cup of coffee. So that's a unique moment that you're catching me. One of my favorite cocktails that I'm drinking right now is I've been making. Mezcal old fashions, just to mix it up, it's been good, yeah. Because I usually drink a lot of whiskey old fashions, but just changing it up is nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And then, I do have coffee right now here, so to connect it to this, I've been doing a lot more carajillos, which is the liquor 43 with coffee. But then, is it just an espresso or is it just filtered coffee? I'm shaking it and doing all these things and it is really refreshing. It is a dangerous drink because you're like, oh, this is just like a sweet iced coffee. But anyways, all right, a couple tips there for folks who are drinking on things. But all right, before we kick it off, we got a warm-up question. We're going to be talking about hype and real outcomes. What's one piece of technology or a tech trend that you think is overhyped right now that is not about data or AI?
I think to be like connected household devices, right? Like, you know, my refrigerator, great, it has Wi-Fi. We've had it for 5 years and I haven't found a single useful use of the connection and the app. Like it's so hard to use. So why would they invest all that money in putting Wi-Fi in devices when they're like—
Do you have an app for it on your phone?
There's an app. So there's an app, but the app only does that device and it sort of gives you a little bit of signal on what's working, what's not, but then it's like other than that, it's like, oh, it tells me the internal temperature, like, oh, I can see that in the fridge as well.
I mean, you were expected by now, like this is connected to AI and ages, like, oh, you're running out of eggs and milk, like
exactly. Something like that, or like, yeah, but nothing, it's useless.
Yeah,
it's
completely useless. I have a smart fridge too, and the only thing that it does that's useful, which it does, it's, you know, the screen will ping you, is When the filter, when it's time to change the filter, but it beeps anyway. So like, you know, I don't really need the app for it.
Yeah. And I think the same thing with the, for me is these, a toaster has Wi-Fi. Like, okay. I don't know. all right. Well, let's kick it off. Juan, honest, no BS. Like how do we stop chasing all these latest hypes and now and really always start focus on business value, business outcomes?
It's hard. I think the challenge is that with every wave of hype, right, there's always a lot of distraction and focus on the shiny objects, and people just lose sight of where the real value or how to get to real value, which is just solving business problems, right? You don't need the latest hype. And I think it's challenging because, especially with AI, in my opinion, or Gen AI, it's much more easy to grasp because everybody can do Gen AI. Like anybody can go to Claude or ChatGPT and, oh, I'm a vibe coder. I can build apps. I can do this, right? So it's easier to grasp, whereas the prior hype waves like big data or were more technical. So they were less easy to grasp by executives. So they were more distracting. But I think that ultimately, if you are a good data leaders know that they need to focus on solving business problems, on cutting through the noise, on working with business teams, on delivering measurable business value, and you just have to be relentless and keep going at it, right? You're going to get distracted and pulled by the business executives telling you, but what about this Gen AI thing? What about this AI solution? What about this other thing, right? Because again, vendors are very savvy at getting to those execs and say, hey, let me do a demo or a pilot of something we can do in 5 minutes, and you have this agent running good. You just have to be relentless on showing business how you're solving business problems relentlessly, right? On an ongoing basis, right? And I think that the thing is, there's plenty of low-hanging fruit business problems that do need to be solved, right? Like there's you don't need to chase like these big things. You just have to go at it. But at the end of the day, right, is how good are you at connecting with the business? As a data leader, how good do you understand the business? How good are you at being able to connect with them and understand like really what problems to solve and just solving the problems, right? I think that because it's easy to throw technology at the problems and as a data leader, you can sort of take a step back and go and get the latest tool and just throw it at the problem and you will be seen as, hey, you're doing what I want you to do. That can get distracting and that can pull the leaders back from solving problems. Again, so long answer, short answer is just focus on business problems and measurable business outcomes, right? At the end of the day, if you're counting, you can count vanity metrics, number of pilots, right? Number of things like shiny, or you can count business value, right? Like X number of millions of dollars in revenue increase because of this solution or cost reduction or whatever, right? The real business outcome metrics are the ones that are going to, you know, sort of carry the most weight and give you most credibility.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense and is very wise advice. Are you seeing a lot of people get, you know, who are data leaders or analytics leaders get a lot of pressure? Because you mentioned that, you know, Gen AI, it's easier to grasp for executives. So it probably means it's more susceptible to hype, right? Because, I don't think all executives are like this, but certainly there's a hefty chunk that are, you know, probably thinking, oh, I played with ChatGPT. And I want that for my enterprise now, right? And they think it's a straight line, or they wish it was, right? So how do you suggest folks navigate this if they're getting a lot of pressure to do Gen AI pilots and things like that? Have you seen ways that they can focus on the pilots that are going to be more successful, or you know, what's your suggestion around some of that?
Yeah, you're right. It's tough because you do have all those executives telling the data teams, do AI, like, let's do something with AI. I was recently at a conference in Bogota, Juan, and I was like large audience of data executives, like, hey, raise your hand if you've had your CEOs come lately and ask about your AI strategy, and three quarters raise their hands, right? So the pressure is real, right? Everybody's asking them to do things. I think that it requires a lot of education and it requires data leaders to be brave in the sense that they have to be able to speak to the truth of here's the reality of doing what you're asking me to do requires, right? There's a lot of risk in doing just, hey, let's just open, you know, any of these, you know, LLMs to the company to do things, right? There's plenty of stories of sensitive information being shared with these LLMs that shouldn't have been shared, right, of sort of breaches of confidential information. So it does require a lot of education, and you do have to sort of be brave. But at the same time, right, you cannot be seen as, I'm not saying let's go slow, let's take a lot of time. Like, you have to sort of find this balance of what, again, if you have a solid data strategy as a data leader, your data strategy is going to be connected to business objectives that matter, right? So that cannot get lost in the conversation. If the CEO comes and says, hey, what about AI? Like, that's great, but here are your top five objectives. Here how we are addressing those through data solutions. Here's how you're bringing value to those. AI or not, we're bringing value, right? Sure, we can experiment with how AI can enhance some of those data solutions to make them better, to go faster. But at the same time, you do realize that to get it done the right way, you have to have good governance, you know, data quality. And it's a lot of, it requires a lot of education. It requires and at the end of the day, to be able to be heard in that educational journey with the executives, you sort of have had to gain the trust of the executives in that you are speaking with a reasonable voice in saying what makes sense, right? I think that data leaders that haven't gained that trust will be probably, are gonna bend more easily to the pressure, right? Because they're gonna say, I don't have the trust, here's an easy way to get the trust, let me just deploy a pilot and maybe they'll get the trust, but you know that's a house of cards, right? Eventually, right, that thing will fail. So if you have been a solid data leader, you've been gaining trust, focus on objectives, have a strategy that delivers value, right? It's gonna be easy for you to sort of push that in that direction. And sure, show how you can embed AI into your programs, into your initiatives, into what you're trying to do. But you have to sort of stand up for yourself and sort of be brave in saying it is hard to get it done the right way, right? And I think fortunately, again, there's plenty of examples of things that have gone wrong that you can bring to bear to say, like, if we don't do it the right way, we're gonna get in trouble, right? You're putting a company at risk, right? So it's a tough balance, I get it, right? But to me, it's just keep on building trust, be brave, a lot of education while you sort of walk that balance.
Yeah, I like your mention of trust being so critical here, because if you don't have a trusted relationship with that exec, right, then they may put pressure and you may say, hey, look, here's the reality about like what can work, what cannot work, what's easy, what's hard. If you have trust, then there's belief and collaboration around that. If right. there's not trust, then they may say, I want you to do it anyway. And I want you to do it my way, right? Even though maybe it's not the right way to approach it.
Exactly.
And one of the things you like, we're talking about business outcomes. And I think when you think about business outcomes, is I always say it's like how you make money, how you save money, right? How you mitigate risk. Those are kind of the three main things. And you said, like, don't count AI pilots or stuff. So what are vanity metrics that you see that are common, that you see common, people are like, oh, these are the vanity metrics that you should say, you should stay away from that. Like, if that's what you're counting, stop that right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think... Awesome. I love the question, Juan. I think that I've been in teams that used to count the size of the data lake. Hey, we have a 5 petabyte data lake. And like, awesome. Like, what are we doing with it? Like, I don't know, but it's 5 petabytes, right? Oh, we have 240 like daily jobs, right? Running data from source to target. Okay, right? There's like 1800 dashboards. That's fantastic, right? But those are absolutely meaningless. Those are busy metrics. Those are vanity metrics. They're absolutely meaningless in the context of business outcomes, right? Those are easy to count, right? You can count the petabytes. You can count the jobs. You can count the number of tables. Like, at some point, there were teams counting columns, right, and tables, right? And so we actually made a bet in one of the teams that I led a few companies ago. It's like, I guarantee you that this company runs on 40 fields. There's 40 columns across the data lake that drive 90% of the value, right? And we tested, and that was it, right? Like, you know, this is not, but it, business outcomes like revenue increase, cost reduction, are harder to measure, right? Because you do, like, at some point, like, how do you attribute? There's that are hard to attribute value to. How do you attribute value to, like, this really good decision-making dashboard that is enabling the business? Like, it's, again, if you establish the system with your business partners, with your finance owners, right, to say, here's how we're going to account for value, here's how we're going to attribute value to it, right? Here's, you start building that sort of system of measuring outcomes and stuff. And I've been part of organizations that have been incredibly disciplined at doing that, and actually organizations that have annual goal. So we're going to generate $100 million in business value through data analytics. And we're going to measure it this way, right? And everybody has a goal, right? And there's a system that finance blesses. And so it's hard to transition to that, but it's doable if you put the effort on getting it done the right way. But again, to your point, like the question was vanity metrics. There's plenty, right? And those easy to track mean nothing, right? Because at the end of the day, they are not necessarily correlated to value. Yeah.
So I love how you say you want to be able to build a system, right? Because at the end of the day, it's not just you as a data leader or people data teams on their own creating these metrics and showing value. Like that value is based on other business lines and you'd be able to go work with all with folks. So one of the things that we constantly see, I'm curious to get your thoughts, is data teams being focused on their data analytics, but they're really just doing reporting.
Right.
And dashboards and all that stuff, and a pipeline to bring all the data together. But then also the ones who are like, no, we're actually driving business, meaning that we're taking those reports, we're doing analytics, we're generating insights, but the insights by themselves don't do it. You have to drive some action to that stuff. So in your experience, how much are you seeing people or teams are focusing just on like the reporting? They think that's it. Versus like they're actually taking the action and working and connecting that. Like, what is that balance and how do we get to more action?
Yeah, no, 100% agree with you, Juan. I think that a lot of teams, depending on how mature they are, or to your point, Tim, how much trust they've aimed, depending on that spectrum, they're going to be more reporting teams that think their role in life is I get a reported request, I deliver a report. How it's used, no clue. If it's used, no clue. I deliver. So those are the order taking teams. And I see that in a lot of sort of immature organizations that, again, are focused on counting more vanity metrics and more activity metrics and busy metrics than business outcomes. If you are, your data maturity is high and you're a leader who really gets the business and are embedded in the business with your business leaders, then your solution are going to be much more about what decisions am I going to help change with my data solution, and how I'm going to create a loop of that, a feedback loop that allows me to understand when decisions are made, what data do I capture to make the decision better and build a system of decision, right? Those to me, my experience with the teams have been are probably fewer teams, and changing to that or migrating to being a reporting team to be more a decision enabling team is really where I think where the gist of it is and what drives a ton of value for data leaders. Again, it's not easy, right? Because a lot of leaders, a lot of business leaders are gonna tell you, just give me the reports. I know what to do, don't mess with me, right? You don't know, right? So you have to gain that trust and you have to earn that level of being a business partner that are working with the business leader to help them accomplish objectives, not just delivering reports. I think that's something that helps a lot in this journey is having a sort of product management mindset to data work, right? Which is I'm delivering products, right, that have to be used. So hence I'm measuring how they're being used, you know, who's using them. I'm actively managing the features I'm building to the data products. I know how they are used and who's using them for what purposes, rather than just like producing dashboards, dumping them into a repository and forgetting about that. There was a team that I was part of a few years ago that we had an inventory of reports that the team was producing, 1,000 reports, right? First of all, our stakeholders were like less than 1,000. So I said, like, you can't have more than one report per person. That just makes no sense, right? Put some measurement into who's using what. And then we realized 70% was not being used. 70% of the things were just sitting there. So start elevating the teams from being reporting teams to being sort of data product owners, data product managers that start working with the business partners to understand how is this, because you know that in many cases, those reports that the business gets, they actually take the data of the report and they build their pivot tables to make the decisions. So get to that end product, right? And if you can influence the decision making better, great. But then if you can automate the decision, for like building systems that actually are now making decisions through with the data in the even better, right? That's getting to a point is really hard because now you're dealing with people, right? And having to change people. Like one of the most amazing experiences I had many years ago at Disney was we wanted to build this recommendation engine for products, right? It was one of the And we could have just built a recommendation engine. We could have just said, hey, yep, here's an engine that recommends products, here it is, right? But what we ended up doing, we had to spend a lot of time with the call center team to like teaching them how to use the output of the recommendation engine into their call flows, right? To make the recommendation, capture the data. We spent like 3 months retraining people and getting them to use the freaking recommendation engine because they wouldn't use it, right? And the real algorithm that was doing the recommendation at first was super simple, but it was just the changing the system and capturing the data and measuring the outcomes and changing behaviors what took the most time, right? Ended up being very successful. Like we increased sales, we proved that it worked, right? But it was all the change management and system and business process redesign that took the most time, not the algorithm and the data piece, right? Not the reporting out of it, right? So sorry, went long on that, but that's...
This is fantastic. And I think you touched on one of the aspects I'm seeing in Tim and I were right. I mean, this is not sales use, but it's a fact. Like six months ago, we entered ServiceNow and we've kind of been, our bubble has burst in the data analytics and we're seeing so much around this stuff. Right. And this is exactly what you just pointed. It's something that we're seeing now over and over again, is that we've lived in a world like, let's go create the data lake and make sure that everything is cataloged and it's beautiful and doing stuff. But in like, and then we generate machine learning, the AI generates these machine learning models and that does the best product recommendation with a higher accuracy. This is great, but nobody's using it. I'm like, well, you didn't make the impact. You didn't take the action. You need to understand the business process flow of where this goes through and tie it to the existing business process. Or maybe there's a new business process, there's a new workflow that needs to come in. And anyways, that's what I'm seeing now. And like, and I love that you're bringing this up because our bubble has burst in the last 6 months. And anyways, I'm now ranting myself. Tim.
No, I'll make two quick comments, and then Juan, I want to ask you a kind of another question that extends upon this. One is that change management and kind of education and cultural impact and stuff, that's hard, right? It's so much easier to create a dashboard and throw it out there and be like, here's the link, right? Than to actually try to operationalize that within the business. Which is kind of my second observation here, which is I think this ties to your comment about vanity metrics and things like that. It's if your team is creating hundreds of dashboards or hundreds of data sets, that's one thing, right? And maybe that's an easier way, but not an effective way to really think about how you're creating value for the organization. But I think people need to be thinking about, hey, what if we create 100 dashboards and everybody just says, oh, that was nice, thanks, right? But doesn't really leverage it. Versus you created one dashboard and it got incorporated into a business process and now it's helping the business make 10% more money, right? Mm-hmm. You only made one dashboard, but it was that maybe was more valuable than the 100 dashboards.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's the 100%, right? I couldn't agree more with that. I think but that does require, I think to your point, data teams that are willing and able to go and talk to people and understand the business problem and be embedded in those business teams to understand how do you use this, right? Like what outcomes are you driving to? Like then you have to know the outcomes. You have to understand the business, the objectives, right? And to your point, exactly, it's much easier to say, just give me a spec of it. Like just draw the dashboard for me and give me the spec. And hey, I delivered it to the spec. Like here it is, right? It's delivered to the spec. But it does nothing, right? Like, it just like sits there and nobody's using it.
So let's dive into this as kind of our next question here, because I think this is an interesting thing. So if imagine you come in as a data leader, right? And you see that, you have a very reactive, very kind of vanity metric driven, reporting oriented kind of team in place, right? Yeah. How do you go about embedding them with the business, right? I've seen it done a lot of different ways and people talk like, oh, you should embed the analyst directly into the business unit. So people think about org change, right? Some people think about like, oh, no, you just need data product managers. They think about new roles, So I'm curious, like if you come in as a data leader, what are the tactics or strategies that you see are most effective to kind of initiate that change?
I think that there's a few things. One, you need to do a hard assessment of your team, right? In terms of, do you have the right people who have the ability and the skills and the willingness sometimes to actually be business facing, business oriented, right? Mm-hmm. Many data teams have grown up from the tech side, right? So you have great tech developers and great tech data people who are amazing at like SQL and dashboards and models and things like that, but they are not comfortable necessarily talking to the business. And that's okay, right? It's not, that's not right or wrong, right? So sometimes you do have some of those more data products, people-oriented type people. And so you need to understand that clearly, right? I think the second thing is you need to do a very sort of open and transparent data sort of listening tour with your business stakeholders, right? Like as a way of tell me what's going on, tell me how you see the team, let's assess the team, right? And what are we giving you, what are we not giving you, where are we failing, where are we not, right? And just collect data about how your team is perceived, right? I think that those two give you sort of a good set of data points, what the business, how the business sees you and perceives you and what's important to them and where you are, right? With those two data points, then you should be able to say, what are some, again, in the spirit of like low-hanging fruit or easy projects or things I can start using to say, let's actually take this for this business unit that's very important and start working with them. Usually what you're gonna find is in some business teams, there's actually people who are very eager to collaborate because they've been waiting and wanting to do things with the data team and they haven't been listened the right way, right? So when you start having those conversations with them about, with the business teams about, I know what you want, here's what you've like, is this what you need? Is it what deliver a solution? Get the teams back, start getting them working closely together. And usually what happens is just by listening to business teams and bringing big and just getting them to work together, that gets some momentum going. And again, my point at the beginning of the conversation was there's usually a lot of very small things you can do for business teams. Like, hey, this is very simple reconciliation report I've been wanting to do. It doesn't work, but if we had that report, we could speed up the business process, right? And so you can do that very easily and start getting the business teams to, that is assuming that you have people in your data organization who are willing, able, and capable to doing that. Many times you have to bring, sometimes there's actually people in the business teams that are very data oriented. You can bring temporarily to your team as a way, hey, come over here to help me start changing the thing. But I think that the key point of your question is like, it's hard, right? Because you do have to have people change, behaviors change, right? Process change, right? And even measuring the way you measure success has to change. So it takes time, and it's going to be harder or easier depending on where you are at that initial assessment, right? One thing that I've done in some teams is like, we just throw a very simple sort of net promoter score survey to the business team. Like, tell me from 1 to 10, would you, and give me something. And it's amazing what people are like. Sometimes the business will give you a lot of really good data points you can act on very easily. Like, hey, we always get this report and it's broken, which is, here it is, we fixed it, we're broken. But that brings trust, that shows the business that you're listening at the right level, you're listening at the solution level, not at the order taking level, right? And it starts creating momentum in changing the organization, right? Many times also with your data teams, when you actually bring something from feedback to them, like, hey, here's the things we're doing great, here's the things we're doing great, here's what the business wants, here's what, once data teams are sort of having clarity and visibility into what's on the other side of that fence with the business, what's happening out there, how's that sort of opens people's eyes to, like, oh yeah, but maybe I should do things differently. Maybe if this, like, you know, but it requires change. And it's all people change, which is the hardest type of change that you go through.
Yeah, I love that you're focusing on, you know, in the same way that you talked about trust with your leadership, there's also a very important aspect of trust with your key business stakeholders. And if you have that trust and you have that listening relationship, then, you know, you're going to know what to focus on. You're going to know how to measure the business value. And you're going to be able to identify like product feedback, right? Like whereas in a less listening oriented way, you might have just said, oh, well, let's create another dashboard, right? But then, but if you said like, but hey, but we have, you know, 10 dashboards or 20 dashboards that already solve a similar problem, like, why aren't you using those? Oh, well, because that data doesn't update fast enough. And oh, that dashboard, you know, I don't trust it because I don't understand what that chart means. Oh, okay, well, then the problem isn't that we need more dashboards, it's that we need to fix the product that we're providing here and then partner and create trust.
Exactly. You got it. Exactly.
So one of the other themes that we're seeing now starting the year is focusing on foundations and going back to foundations and stuff. Yeah. So how much of this, what are your suggestions about like balancing? Yeah, we need to do our foundational work, but a lot of that seems like it's I need to do this investment and there's not going to be a lot of the quick wins. So how do I balance like investing in foundation, but at the same time generating these quick wins, but not doing everything or just quick wins, but I'm now not focusing on foundations and stuff like that. So what's your experience on
yeah, 100%. I think foundational work is incredibly important, but I think organizations and data teams lose sight of how important or lose sight of the importance when the foundational work is done in an unbalanced way. And so here's what I mean, right? It would be awesome if you're given as a data leader like 5 years to build the most pristine data infrastructure and lake. That's great, right? Like that's never gonna happen. That's sort of the build and they will come, right, approach that's never worked in my 25 years. I've never seen an organization that successfully has taken that approach of let's build a data infra. Going on the other side of the spectrum, which is like ad hocing everything, right? And everything's a one-off, like you know that you end up with a ton of tech debt that is like unmanageable. And so I think the key is balancing the foundation. I think it is possible when you have a very disciplined sort of product management view into what the roadmap of data products is, be it dashboards, models, whatever solutions, right? You should be able to, from that roadmap, extract the slices of foundation need to be built to support those data products in a way that you enable reusability and sort of strength of the foundation. So reusability means I'm not building just one-off data infrastructure, I'm building data infrastructure that I can reuse for many times for different purposes. Right? You know, for a business domain, right? If I build this set of data products, like be it models, dash, whatever, I'm building a smaller foundation I can reuse for those purposes. And so you should be able to struggle and build those licenses. And from a strength perspective, I'm talking about like data governance and data quality, all these sort of things. Like you guys have seen it, right? Like data governance fails because you try to build these sort of massive theoretical data governance programs from the top down that become just tons of policy that nobody wants to follow, right? But if you take an approach of what level of governance do I need to enable this slice of foundation, to enable this slice of data products, right? And becomes more about the data enablement and data governance, then you are sort of slice by slice building your master data governance program, data management program, right? Eventually. And so I think that, you know, as a data leader, you need to be able to have that ability to sort of like from the pieces, build a big build picture, like you're building these data products, but you know how each data product contributes to the big picture of foundation and on data management from that process that need to be, and do it in a way that matters. Like I was having a conversation with an organization back in December, like and saying, for each data product, do you know how that data product that is launched contributes in terms of data management, in terms of governance, metadata, right, lineage? Or are you just not doing it because it's too hard? Like, well, we're not doing it because it's too hard, but okay, so why don't you do it? Like, why don't you, like you're launching this data product, make sure that the quality is up to date, it has the data quality rules, the data management, the data governance rules, lineage, all those things. And all those things now are part of your larger data management program and sort of contribute slice by slice, right? So again, it's hard, but again, that's your role as a data leader, so I'd be able to like step back and from the little pieces, build the big picture. And doing it this way is a way that you don't need necessarily massive investment. You do need some basic infrastructure investment in terms of your data quality tools and foundation, but there's definitely a way to do it by slice. Like we've done it, like at TD, we did some of that foundation building this way, right? And it was hard because you had the tech side wanting to like, no, let's build the data lake first and left to right. I said, but if you go left to right, you're never going to get to business value. So let's do it right to left. Let's enable business value. But with each slice of business value, we should be able to say, this fits here in the foundation, this fits here in the foundation, and start sort of building it one piece at a time. And we actually ended up having to kind of do it, like go rogue initially and just proved that it was doable, and then we showed it was doable, and we didn't need much more budget, we didn't need more time. We're just having that discipline of by product that you're delivering, making sure that you clearly identify how it contributes to the foundation. Does that make sense, Juan? Did I?
Yeah, no. So hold on. I want to. This has been awesome. So a couple things I've been taking notes here. I think I have a new T-shirt quote, which is "Data foundations do it by slice."
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Did it have like a picture of a pizza or something?
Yeah.
Like
that? So here's what's interesting. Like you say, like some people will say, no, business value come first. We're going to go right to left, and then that means that we'll build the foundations later on. But then you have the risk of just doing a bunch of one-offs and stuff like that. You do left to right, then you're doing the big bang approach, and you're not focused on business value. And the approach there is kind of do this by slice. And you said something really interesting I never thought about, which is how much, when you're thinking about you're building a data product, like how much is that data product has been contributing to the data management or the governance? In a way you can think about it is like every resources that you're attaching to building some data product, you should think about it. I'm adding a little tax, a foundational tax that there's an extra work that needs to be done, which that's part of my slice. I never thought about the slice. I do have my analogy is you want to have an iron thread, which is you want to be able to go from the business value all the way down to the data. And it's a simple thread, how to get this, just one thread, get this going. And then you're like, oh, well, this is good. Well, I'm going to add another thread to that stuff. And then your thread becomes stronger. And every time you add a little bit more to it, and then each thread's become a fabric.
Yeah, No, exactly. And I think that if we just take like the data governance domain, right, and say, at the end of the day, the role of data governance is to enable trust on data. That's it, right? Like that there's nothing else. I mean, there's some organizations have regulatory demands on, and that's why data governance is important. But so that's why to me, like if you're launching a data product, is that data product trustworthy, right? And you only accomplish that by having the data quality rules in place, the lineage, the metadata, right? Like all those different things, right? And there's nothing stopping you from saying, okay, all those data governance things for this data product can go into the master repository, and now I'm building that enables reusability, right? And that's the purpose of just enabling like the data foundation. And that's how you actually build foundation, right? You do need the framework that is able to capture those things and to monitor. Like if you build data quality rules into a data product, I mean, you need an engine that actually runs those rules, monitors those rules. So you need the framework, right? But it's that sort of duality of building by slices, right? Of building by domain of like enable the granular use case, but make sure that it has the components that are building the larger foundation.
So Juan, before we move to our lightning round here, just to kind of put a bit of a cap on this foundations conversation, to data leaders out there, what do you call out as the key things that people need to do for their data foundation? Like if, you know, I know people think about like the Dhamma circle and there's like, you know, quality and this and that and the other thing, like if what are for you like the three or four most important areas that when you think data leaders are building a foundation, what are the key kind of pillars of that foundation to you?
I think there's, you know, really honestly, I think a few things, Tim. I think one is foundations are important for reusability, right? Like you have a foundation that enables reusability, right? That's the way you can scale, because that allows you every N plus one product will be way less expensive to build, marginally expensive to build. That's reusability, right? I think the second one is scalability, right? Like in terms of, at the end of the day, like if you really believe in this data democratization thing, you want massive amount of people using data, and so you need a foundation that can scale very quickly to that. That's the theory of I want everybody using data in my organization. And I think the third thing is trustworthiness, right? Like, you know, do you have that foundation that's trustworthy, that allows people to say, yeah, anything that comes out of that, any data product, I trust, because I know that in that foundation, there's the right rules, the governance, the all those things that make the data trustworthy. So I would just summarize in those three things. Yeah. Reusability, scalability, and trustworthiness.
I love that. That's a very, it's a very approachable set of pillars for folks to think about that I think has practical implications. So I appreciate you making it simple like that.
And curious to my my take on this is you said reusability, scalability, trustworthiness. Scalability seems to me to be one that is more or almost fully focused on technology, while reusability and trustworthiness is one that is a balance between technology and the people process. And I think we traditionally will look at all of them as technology. I'll think about foundations are like more tech, but they're not. The reusability and the trustworthiness are things that involve a lot more on the people side. I'm biased, it's my area, but like reusability, that's where the whole area of semantics and make sure that we're talking about the same definition of a customer reusing that. Yeah. And if I know, and they connected to the trustworthiness, and I'm looking for some customer data, like, is this the customer data that follows my definition? If it's not, I know that, and I know I'm not going to go use that. I'm going to go find the one that it is. I can go trust that. So I think that's the important part. That's something I'm seeing here, which I really like how you pulled it out. And always the three is a good number because
I agree with you, Juan. I think that scalability, to me at least, has a non-technical aspect in that you always want that bringing that N plus one user into the data ecosystem. It requires like marginal to no effort. And that means that person can find the information, can access the information very easily. But, and so it has the performance angle, but eventually you want people to just have data to be so easy to use that they can just come on board and just use it, right?
Right. No, you're right. I think at the end of the day, like if you talk about these three pillars, you can talk about the technology aspects and the social aspects of these things, the people aspect, all this. All right. Wow, we got a lot of notes. All right, but before we get our notes, lightning round questions. I'm gonna kick it off. First one, should every data initiative have a hard ROI target? Yes or no?
No.
Okay, expand on that quickly.
If we define hard as something I can like quantitatively measure, that's why I'm saying no, because a lot of things are like risk mitigation, right? Are gonna be more qualitative in nature, right? And so that's my difference. Is it a qualitative business outcome versus a quantitative business outcome?
So, man, are you spying on our next question?
You anticipated the next question, which I thought might come out of this first question, which is, can qualitative outcomes sometimes be enough to call success?
100%, and that's how you start, right? I think that like if you think about the example I shared on measuring stakeholder satisfaction through just NPS, that's qualitative, right? It's like, hey, how happy are you with the services of the data team? That's how you start. Like I've had teams measure, hey guys, go and measure mentions of the data team in meetings and happiness on that's a way to start, right? Ideally, it would be awesome if everything's quantitative, right? But I think the qualitative dimension of business of value is super useful and it gets you going.
This is a great honest no BS. I think I feel some people are like on one camp, like it always has to be about money, which I guess so too. But
it's always easy to over-index on advice, right? Because they say like, oh yeah, I agree. Hard metrics. Okay, every Jira ticket in our data system must have a metric tied to it. It's like, hold on.
Exactly.
All right, next question: is moving cautiously with AI a competitive disadvantage?
No. Is moving cautiously a competitive disadvantage? No, I think moving cautiously is, to an extent, a competitive advantage in that there's a great article, I think, from impact of AI is something that will happen in the long term, in the long run, right? It's a long game, right? And so by moving cautiously, you are more focused on mitigating the risk and in the right way, which eventually will make your competitive advantages stronger, right? So that's what I mean by moving cautiously is not a competitive disadvantage.
Yeah, I feel like that ties to your comments about trust, that like you and your leadership need to make sure that you're not over obsessed on winning the short-term battle and then lose the war. The war is longer term.
And to that point, I think, Juan, you and I had an exchange about this via LinkedIn the other day, like this, I think it was Tom Davenport in a podcast recently, like, and the challenge here is that tech innovation moves faster than organizations' ability to adopt change, right? So that's why it's a long game because it's always going to be faster to change the organizations, to adopt the solutions, right? And so you have to be cautious about how you get things done.
Well said. All right, last lightning round question. Are most companies doing AI without a clear business problem?
I'm going to say yes with an asterisk in that I think that a lot of companies, most companies, are just jumping on it because of the FOMO factor, not because of how they have really thought this through, right? That's my take.
I think that's
right. Takeaway time. Tim, take us away with takeaways. We got them.
I know. We have so many takeaways. I'm going to try to pick my favorite ones here. So we started off by, you know, there's all this hype, but we need to focus on the business outcomes. How do we focus on the business outcomes? And you said it's hard because, you know, especially with Gen AI now, it's so easy for executives to grasp that it makes it more susceptible to over-indexing on the hype. And, you know, and you said it in your last lightning round question response, and that there's a FOMO factor, right? Other companies are doing cool stuff around Gen AI. You're like, oh my God, we got to catch up. We got to do it, right? But you got to make sure you do it the right way. So you said, be relentless about focusing on the value. So be relentless and focus on how you're solving the business problems. There's plenty of low-hanging fruits. You have to build trust with your leadership, and you really need to understand the business. How connected are you with them on the problems that need to be solved? And don't count things like AI pilots as the business outcomes. Count the impact on the business. And we'll talk more about that because I think we've got some good notes on that. It requires data leaders be brave and honest and truthful about what is actually required in order to make certain use cases work around Gen AI. Right? That requires you to have that trusted open relationship. It requires education. It requires, you know, quote unquote, literacy. It requires really a well-coordinated data strategy. And data leaders that haven't gained that trust, they will have to bend. And so you want to make sure that you're not being put in that position, right? We also talked about metrics. You gave some great examples of some vanity metrics, like how big is your data lake, all right? Like, you know, two CDOs walk in a bar and say, well, I got a 5 petabyte data lake. Well, mine's a 10 petabyte data lake. Oh my gosh, right? Like, is that value? Probably not, right? But it's cool. How many jobs you're running, or how many pipelines you have, or how many dashboards you have, or how many created this month, right? Those are vanity metrics. They're easy to count, but they don't map to business value. And I love this phrase that you, this comment that you made. You made it very quickly in passing. You said, I bet that there are 40 columns that drive 90% of your business. And that's super interesting because I think people always think of like big data, so vast. And there's a lot of, you know, data out there and, you know, unstructured data, logs and things like that. It can get very big. But if you really think about what runs your business, there's like 40, 50, maybe 100 critical attributes that run your business.
Yes.
And that's important. A lot needs to revolve around that, and don't lose focus around that. Juan, what were your big takeaways?
Yeah, so I love how we discussed about teams, about if they're doing reporting versus taking actions, right? You said it really depends on trust, because teams who are just taking orders to do reports, they have less trust in an organization. They generate a report, they don't even know how it's being used or if it's being used at all. If you are a trusted data team, then you're part of that decisions, like your data solution is driving decisions, right? So you built a whole system of decision. You're really a decision enabling team. Yeah. Usually it's few amount of data teams will be doing this. So you have to go from a reporting team to a decision intelligence team is about gaining trust of the business leaders, right? And data product management mindset helps for that transition. I love this other one. You said, if there are 1,000 dashboards, there is no way that you have 1,000 stakeholders. How can you have more than one dashboard per stakeholder, for gosh sake, right? It's a people problem, educating people how to use the results. Like you say, like, we built this gigantic, amazing recommendation engine, which, by the way, can be very simple. But getting them to go use it, that was the change management, connecting the business processes. So what are the tactics to initiate this change to become more part of the decisions, right? First, make a hard assessment of your team. Do they have the skills and the willingness to be more business people facing, right? Many teams are very technical and they're not comfortable with the business. That's okay, but you need to be able to figure out who can be that business people facing. And second is how open and transparent, be open and transparent with your business stakeholders, right? Have them assess your team. How are they being perceived? With those two data points, you can get a good overview. And then when you start talking, right, business teams, maybe you'll find the ones that are eager, listen to them, you'll get the momentum going. You'll find the simple things that can be done. And this all depends, again, that you have the data teams who have those skills and willingness. NPS of the data team, like this is a big thing that's come up. Like let's, those quick wins that kind of generate the trust and will build more momentum. And then we talk about the foundations. I mean, obviously, we all want to say, hey, here's 5 years and all this money. Go build a pristine data infrastructure. That will never happen. The other side of the spectrum is everything's going to be a one-off. You should not do that. So you need to have some discipline. And one thing you said is like, what is your roadmap? And everything in your roadmap, a slice of that should be going into your foundations, right? So, for example, data governance fails when you're building this top-down policies that nobody cares about. So the quote we have here is data foundations, do it by slice. Some people will say, do it right to left. Start with business value, and then you're doing all the foundations later. If you do left to right, you're doing the foundations first, but then it's all tech first. So you can do it by slice, and I really like that. That's a balance. And we close with your three pillars of foundation. Reusability, that's how you scale for impact. Scalability, match high value, velocity, and actually people can find things and be more scalable themselves. And third, trustworthiness. I want to make sure I can trust this data for my use cases and so forth. And then all of those have that technical aspect and that social aspect. How did we do? What did we miss?
Awesome. Yeah, I think this is great. I think that the one thing that we didn't talk about, which I've been thinking a lot about recently in this notion of new data stacks, is the legacy tech debt, right? Organizations have a ton of tech debt in like legacy dashboards, legacy models. Everybody wants to build new, and building new is great, right? But you have a lot of old crap that need to be converted, right? And how do you move all that stuff into modern foundations that are scalable, reliable, and trustworthy? That's
easy. Another episode on itself.
Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about the tech debt, right? Everybody talks about building new and new tools and new models and everything.
That's a good point. I think also, the ones who are, they're like, oh, well, now AI will be able to take all this stuff and just automatically translate it. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, probably, but it's not that magical. So
exactly. Anyway,
I think that's the tension between some of the, you know, newer, younger companies versus, you know, more established older companies, right, is that they say, oh, wow, this is so exciting. And by the way, 95% of my attention is still managing this legacy stack, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
All right, to wrap up, three questions. What's your advice? Who should invite next? And what resources do you follow?
What's my advice? Success in data is a people problem, right? It's a people organization problem. So the better you are at that in terms of having the empathy to build relationships with your stakeholders and your leaders and your teams, you're going to be more. That's the advice I give like young data people who reach out to me for advice. Like the tech stuff is the easy part. The people stuff is the hard part. Like you want to be successful, be a people person, right? Who should you invite? I don't know if you guys know Roman Stanek, CEO of Good Data. He's awesome. Roman's great. He and I talk a lot. Good Data is a very interesting company. It's been in the BI, AI space. But the way he thinks about this stuff is very similar to what we've talked about. So I would encourage you to invite Roman next. And resources, like, holy crap, I think that's the biggest, like, I feel so behind. I focus a lot on the Substack newsletters, like you have some great stuff, one, and you guys are the podcast, right? I try to mainly use LinkedIn as my guide of what to read and what to follow. It's tough, like, I feel behind. Like, I feel I'm so behind all the time. I would say I rely a lot on key people on LinkedIn who usually reference good articles and stuff.
I'm curious on that because I there's a lot of people who are like, oh, screw LinkedIn. I second. They're going to Substack and stuff. I don't have that. I think LinkedIn is great for me. What is your tactic on how do you – is there a way that you curate or you follow people or stuff on LinkedIn or
– There's a few people I follow, and I try to like read what they post and then follow the links and usually in the comments you find someone. So it's more like someone posts something, right? There's a really good article or idea, and then there's links and there's articles, and I try to follow that. That's sort of my tactic. Yeah,
in your LinkedIn feed, how much annoying AI slop or stuff shows up? I'm curious.
Oh yeah, no, there's okay. There was one awesome last week. There was this guy who wrote about saying people are complaining about AI content through AI content, right? People are writing AI content to complain about AI content. It is like, oh, that's just the inception world of AI. Yeah, yeah. That's tough. You're right. There's definitely a lot of AI slop that you need to like discern. But you know the people who write a lot of good stuff, and I try to follow them and yeah, make it a point of follow their articles and the comments. In the comments, there's usually some good advice as well. Yeah.
Right. Well, Juan, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing all your advice. There is so much to unpack here. So cheers, and looking forward to actually, we have never met in person, so hopefully we can meet in person.
Hopefully we can meet in person one day.
Exactly. All right. Cheers.
Cheers.